welcome aboard our vessel. I'll be your captain. Join me and my trusty ally, the cook, as we set sail through our relationship with music, film, literature, and everything in between, as well as our ongoing exploration into mental health and well-being. Anchors up.
Shmai Pope.
Hi.
That was to the wider listener group.
A wider listener group. Really projected your voice across the world then,
Shema,
didn't you?
Open your windows, everyone. Shema.
Hi. I'm all right. I've had... People who know me I've had a few issues with my leg, so I've been able to run and stuff. So I had my first shockwave treatment therapy. And actually found out what I've done wrong with it. So, yeah, I'm feeling electric, shall we say.
He's electric.
It's interesting sort of reflecting on it, and recently just how much actually it's been affecting me not being able to run or walk. I think the past week is where it really hit me. I was like, oh, I can do the gym, but I really, like, my coping is to get out, is to move, is to walk, and it's just uncomfortable. So fingers crossed I'll be back going again soon. Joked with the physio I'll be doing a marathon soon, and he didn't laugh back. So
I've noticed it, your messaging and stuff, it was getting you down, wasn't it? And then you, from yesterday, you've sort of changed a bit, because you, like I said, you've made another sort of step forward.
Yeah.
It's funny about electro and stuff, because you borrowed a book from me, The Regeneration.
Yes.
Talks about how they, different methods of treating people who are dealing with post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever, because electroshock was brought in at that time. Mm. So it'd be interesting to get your reflections at that time, just a little aside.
Yeah, I guess, well, how are you?
You don't really care, do you? Let's get on with it.
Yeah, let's go.
No, I'm all right. Yeah, I've had a majority of the week at home, although I did nip to Whitney yesterday, which is just outside of Oxford, which is a lovely little town, by the way, lovely little market town west of Oxford. But I've got a bit more travelling to do this week, which I'm conscious my back's playing up again.
Okay.
But I haven't been going to the gym, so I've been so busy. I think I've been using it as an excuse. The bike was helping me in the gym. Mm-hmm. So tomorrow morning I'm going to go up and I'm going to jump on the bike for a good hour and just not even go for it, just go through the motion, stretch it out a bit.
Yeah.
But Bewley, we had a fab episode, didn't we?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And getting to see Sudocool play against see Bewley. I know we reflected in the outro before, but still, I'm bouncing, really excited for what's to come. Especially with Big Sesh coming up.
And yes.
Actually, yeah.
Both playing, Key and Sudo.
Yeah. Key got headlining one Saturday night. Yeah. So we'll be there, front and centre.
And also, Ellis, we have to say for Schlug, right? You and Keir just have to fight it out.
I know,
We might have to split ourselves
we
up.
We might have to.
Just to, to cover it.
We'll break up to cover it.
We're just really happy to see people that we love and enjoy doing well. Bewley, after us, he went on to London, didn't he? And he's gone on travelling. Yep. So we're keeping an eye on his Instagrams.
Yep.
I do have to apologise. My dad said I swore a bit too much in that pod. I reflected going, that was the day that Sleaford Mods was released. I'd been listening to Mr. Bewley's album.
Yeah.
And I listened back, I can't even remember I did. And I'm thinking maybe that's the way it was, just it needed to come out.
Yeah.
I felt really like I was a Sleaford Mods, when I listened to people like them and Bewley, make me reflect on how angry they just succinctly put in what's wrong with the world.
Yeah.
And I think it came out. So I did listen back. I didn't think I swore that much, so I listened to it. And there was a few swears.
Slap on the wrist.
So
yeah. But I mean, we've had a voicemail.
We have.
Yeah.
Let's have a listen.
Hey there, guys. It's Mr. Bewley here. I'm just checking in to see whether or not you two have been bored for an hour this week.
Thanks for the message.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? We said, I think, when he said it, we love stuff like that, don't we? Yeah. Just stopping and staring. Firstly, for me, you commented before, I was painting my lounge. I stared at the green wall.
Yeah.
And you know what? I found it actually really relaxing. What I ended up doing off the back of it was actually organising my some of the poems that I've noted down. So I've started to organise onto a computer.
Yeah.
So it just gave me that space to go, you really want to do that? You've been banging on about doing it for ages. Just do it now. And I had time. Mm. So I had space. The house was quiet. I reflected. And I felt really good after, because I feel like when it's all written down, I love writing, but it's everywhere.
Yeah.
When you put it on a computer and put it into folders, files, and you sort it out. So Bewley, thank you. That helped me. And how did you find it?
Yeah, also really enjoyed it. And I took a different take on it, where I put, obviously, electronics and stuff to one side. But I did it when Eve, obviously, has appeared on the podcast, cat, a few times, when she's staring out the front window. And I've literally just gone and just looked out with her. and just followed what she's watching.
That's interesting.
And just sort of pausing. And like, there was one point she was watching a bird. Oh, and like, okay. I was, and the bird had a worm. And we were both, just there looking at it. And
I'm hungry now.
Yeah, taking it in. And it was nice. And obviously she regulated when I had to stop, because she'd just hit me when she had enough of me
next to her.
But it was really, just having that time to pause and just look. I just, not really think of anything. Yeah. Just like, oh, what's out there? Okay.
Let the thoughts come and go.
Yeah.
And live the mind of a cat for a bit.
I know. Yeah.
Well, we got
to get my bum though, so.
I've seen you do that. Right. Your leg's not letting you do it at the moment, is it?
No.
This has been requested.
Yes.
A couple of times. I'm looking at Charlotte. I'm looking at Guy. I'm looking at some others out there who've talked about this one. So let's crack on in, is it? Big up, it's a stick up. I wonder if anyone can guess from there. No, we are talking about Hail Mary, run with me. We are doing...
Are you okay?
I'm just malfunctioning a little bit. So, as I said, we've had a couple of requests. In fact, though, the time of doing this was suggested by yourself, wasn't it, I think?
Yes, it was.
Because you just fancy doing something a bit different.
Mm.
This is not a style you normally go to.
Nope,
is it?
Not at all.
So, and I think it started from you watching the LA 92.
Yes,
on
the documentary. What? Yes, so we saw Disney.
Disney, that's
was
right.
It Disney? Yeah, I think it was Disney had it on. Or some. Yeah, I watched it
it's
somewhere.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
So yeah,
that,
really,
firstly, that
really
comes
good.
Highly recommended.
Yeah.
Firstly.
That's it's all, as we say normally, all the links are in there. So.
So we're going to talk about the Notorious B.I.G., Biggie, mm-hmm. and Tupac today. Mm-hmm. So I think first and foremost for anyone, we can't do a stand intro because we're talking about two different people here, but this is the whole phenomenon of basically two people starting out as friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Tupac had been on the scene a little bit longer. He was an actor as well and quite well established. And then sort of Biggie blew onto the scene from some of his sort of stuff. Well, in those days, going viral, I suppose.
Yeah.
He was a street rap battler. You can see footage of him on YouTube doing his street rap battles. I caught the attention of Tupac, and, you know, their life started out pretty well. You know, they were friends. Mm. Tupac admired Biggie. And then it led to a point where Tupac went to New York to record, and people broke into the offices and shot at him. I think he got shot 5 or 6 times. And the paranoia set in for Tupac, and he was convinced that Puff Daddy, who was sort of Biggie's mentor, producer, had set him up.
Mm.
And from there, the rift grows, which then leads to the whole West Coast. East Coast, firing shots at each other, and ultimately resulted in them both, you know, being slain, basically about a year apart, well, not even a year apart. So you watched the original Nick Broomfield documentary, didn't you, I think, which was shot a few years after Biggie died, early 2000s, sort of that time. Just reflections, mate. What did you find from watching it? What did you think?
I think one thing that stood out was how protective everybody was in talking about what happened, what's going on. And obviously, that's, you know, gang culture. You know, you don't, because people are worried about
don't
being
snitch.
A snitch.
Yeah.
You know, and
don't
actually
snitch.
Being the snitch. And, you know, especially when things are filming and they're like, well, why am I going to talk to you? What am I going to say?
Yeah.
And then also, interesting, I think, was it Tupac's friend who said that he had some original tapes?
Yes.
And tried to make money from
that's
it?
That's right.
And it's that, I mean, it's the dilemma of actually, should you be making money from your friend's demise?
Yeah.
Or should you actually say, no, you know what? He was so inspirational that I'm just going to let people listen to this music and let people have it. But the irony that as they were playing the music, a helicopter went over so you couldn't hear the music.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. It was just But still, when he was walking around, the culture of the police stopping him and saying, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you filming? Like, you know, the 1992, so LA riots or Rodney King riots.
Yes.
You know, whichever way you want to describe it. But just really seeing the continued impact, I guess, you know, it's still today. You know, there's a lot around that and shared about, you know, obviously Black Lives Matter and, you know, the way authority is stamped on people. But for me, you know, didn't really know a lot about the stories before. I listened to a couple of podcasts as well, and just quite shocked, I guess, watching especially how involved Tupac was in the one fight in the casino.
Yeah, well, he didn't see the man he got shot, wasn't
it? Yeah, but it literally just, you could almost see his change of behaviour.
Yeah, definitely.
And how he, I mean, yeah, best way to use it is he lost it.
Definitely.
Completely lost it with this person. And all that pent up, I guess, aggression energy that he was holding, and he just went, oh, you're going to have it then, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're spot on. I think, I said to you, didn't I, and I would recommend to everyone, the Nick Blumenfeld, the original one, I think, is on Amazon. He did a follow-up in recent years, because a linchpin in all of this is Suge Knight.
Yes.
And Suge Knight was obviously, took Tupac under his wing, was the Puff Daddy, you know, basically, the Puff Daddy was to Biggie, he was to Tupac.
Yeah.
And I think Tupac got paranoid after he got shot. Now, when you listen to people talk about Tupac, he was very thoughtful. He was into drama, hence why he was an actor. Yeah. And he was a soft guy. They called him the poet, you know, like the ghetto poet.
Mm.
But he changes. After getting shot at, after going to prison, he changed. And I think it was Suge Knight who ended up getting him, who met him from prison. You got the footage of him driving away, spitting at the cameras outside, who were waiting for him. And if you watch this follow-up documentary, because where you said the one you watched, people are still shy of talking, at this point, on this one, Suge Knight's locked up and everyone starts talking.
Yeah.
So it was obvious. Now, he was called a blood Piru, you know, Bloods and Crips in LA, in Compton, South Central, all that. Snoop Dogg is the famous Crip. He's blue. Suge Knight was a red. He was a blood, you know. And interestingly, with Tupac, when he came out, he went through being initiated into the blood gang.
Right.
You have to go through initiation. Yeah. And one of the things that was that night was him assaulting that guy in the casino was him showing that I'm a blood, because the guy that he assaulted was a Crip.
Okay.
Now, the official narrative is, later on, after the fight, I think it was a Mike Tyson fight, he leaves the casino and gets shot. And they're saying that, I can't even think of his name, my mind's gone blank, but the guy that he beat up in the casino, they said was the one who shot him outside.
Yeah.
When you listen to this documentary, though, all right, and it's the same for Biggie, because he got shot leaving an after party, whatever it was, and that was in LA, because everyone was saying to him, don't go to LA, right? But he was like, I'm going. They were saying, these parties are literally full of celebrities. The police are everywhere. Nothing can happen without the police's say-so.
Yeah.
So it's not through an accusation or not. If you watch the most recent documentary in particular, they're saying those things couldn't happen without the police letting it happen, because they were everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. And there's been speculation, there's been talk, it's never been proved, that in both deaths, because of the what the LAPD and things called the insinuation of violence through music, they wanted to shut them down.
Yeah.
And like you said, that was spawned from the LA and the Rodney King riots. Yeah. It's still going on, isn't it?
Looking stamp authority, isn't it? You know, and
absolutely.
A lot of people, power can go to their head.
Yeah.
You know, as demonstrate, you know, as you know, we said, there's a lot of positive things, you know, authorities do, police do, but there's some people which, you know, recently we've seen where it's gone too far.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gone malicious, it's gone, well, outright disgusting with some things that have come out with WhatsApp messages and things, and it's abusing power. And
it's like, the Met, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, the Met at the moment. And but again, it's sort of almost trying to shut down people having their own say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Tupac and Biggie, they're getting big, they're inciting whatever. You know, I mean, then we go into NWA as well.
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely. Just, yeah. Well, they were the first ones, weren't they, to come out and really challenge just, authority.
Yeah.
You know, massive inspiration to Tupac and, well, all the rappers that came after them.
Mm.
You know, because it was finally going, we've had enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said, fuck the police.
Yeah.
That was the song.
Yeah, and coming straight from the underground.
Yeah, and LAPD tried to shut that song down, and they realised you can't stop it.
No.
Right, and I always find, like, because I love rap music, but I grew up on it with my Uncle Robbie and stuff like that, and he was more of a Tupac fan, so we listened to a lot of Tupac. But I just remember, like, have you seen that meme going around? Me listening to rap songs while on the way to my regular job. I am that typical person. Yeah. I'm in the suit, blasting it out.
Yeah. You sound the person in the gym listening to Disney.
Yeah! That sums up me and the captain right there, doesn't it? Like, I'm a wannabe gangster, you're a wannabe Disney princess.
Yeah. With the hair and everything.
But no, I think it's just interesting to note that when you watch the follow-up documentary with Nick Boone, I think it's just called Biggie and Tupac, it's on the iPlayer. Mm. But they were coppers, LAPD officers, that were known to be in the Bloods or sympathetic to the Bloods and run jobs outside of the police, like protection rackets and stuff like that. So it's a fact, you know. And there was one officer, and he was involved in the first Nick Broomfield one, and they show loads of footage of him in the second one, who had to leave the police.
Yes.
But he carried on investigating. He knew that the LAPD were involved and he was doing his bit. But he had like the whole LAPD against him.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me with Biggie and Tupac, the biggest shame of it all is the two friends who actually we talk about, we've talked about Elton John and Bernie. John and Paul. Well, and George, you want to throw that into the mix as well. Andrew Blackburn and the Rolling Stones. These two, which we got to see posthumously, right, where they, obviously people like Eminem produced and brought their voices together. What could they have done? I mean, they'd probably still be going.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, they're still going.
Yeah.
Biggie and Tupac would have still been going. It's just a shame, isn't it, mate, that we didn't get to see what could have happened if they were able to remain friends.
And just looking at, you know, Biggie was 24 and Tupac was 25. You know, and that's just way, like, for the talent they had. And, you know, I know, as you mentioned, Eminem has obviously picked up some things and really tried to push it. Elton John did the Ghetto Gospel.
Yes, he did.
You know, song. Yeah. And it's, yeah, just a loss, you know. And for me, not really knowing a lot about this field, listening to this music, so having a listen recently, it's very much, oh, that actually I probably now would quite like to see what the influence would have been,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
And where, what angle the, you know, they may have taken, I guess, the whole genre
definitely
and stuff. And with the, I don't know, I might be wrong, but like, you know, with the rap and like you got the Jay-Z and the Linkin Park, that link up and stuff, and actually what would these two have, who would they have linked up with, if they linked together or if they didn't link together, like what the potential there.
Time's a great healer. I think if they had had the time, eventually they would have settled their differences, you know. And I think there's so many caveats. So like, you know, if you look at Tupac, his mother was a Black Panther, so he always had that political edge to him. Biggie was always known for the flow. Jay-Z took a lot of inspiration from Biggie, the double entendres, more commentating on black people's lives in terms of putting himself in the role of a shooter, someone who's going to do an armed robbery, all of that. Tupac stuff was up until he did that. He was the first ever rapper, by the way, Tupac, to release a double album, which was All Eyes on Me.
Yeah.
So the first rapper to do that. But his position, again, it on All Eyes on Me, it changes. Before, it's a lot of like commentary on the suppression of black people and stuff like that, whereas Biggie would normally like take that glorified stance. He'd own the position of a black people, do you know what I mean, and say, yeah, I'm going out, if I don't shoot and rob this person, I'm not going to eat. And that's what, you know, we had ghettos created around us, and that's what's going to happen when you put us, you know, in that situation. But I remember watching, there's an interview with Tupac, it's fantastic, I'll find it on YouTube and I'll send it to you. But when he's young, he's literally in high school, I think it is, and there's like a really good interview with him about his perception of the world. And he's saying all rich people should live as poor people and all poor people should get to live as rich people, because then you see both sides of it. You know, when you're poor, you're just like almost programmed to get poorer and poorer and poorer.
Yeah.
You know, and the richer just get richer and richer. And that's a fact, isn't it? I mean, even through COVID, where everyone was struggling, I think Jeff Bezos just kept making more and more money, didn't he? Because people sat at home bored, getting targeted ads sent to their phone and just buying it. It was arriving the next day. It's quite satisfying, isn't it? It's like a brain thing. Oh, I feel good when a package arrives. You know, I do more of it, more of it, more of it. So I think if people get the chance to watch that, would be really interesting. But I you do see that change in character. Is that coming to your work as well? A big thing, something happens and you can take one road or another. So it's like Tupac's thing was he was put into jail. He was very paranoid. So he went on the attack. Is that like a form of defence almost as well? Like he's defending himself a bit maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. No, and it's something which you have Shield of Shame, which might link into it. So, you know, for example, let's say Nora did something wrong.
Yeah.
And you tell her off, but somebody else did it. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
Or she'll go on the offensive, or she'll become withdrawn and tearful. It's very much not wanting to turn around and say, actually, I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
It's more, I'm going to protect.
Yes.
I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to stand up for what I believe I should do.
Yeah,
I should
have done.
But then also, you know, you get the reform thing where people leave prison. They have reformed.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
They
absolutely
have made changes and they are really trying. I know me and Charles just watched 24 Hours in Police Custody around that.
Yeah,
around
somebody
who's left and then unfortunately was murdered. So he left prison, would start making changes, and then and that's not a spoiler, it's happened at the start of the episode.
Sad.
But also, you know, I was just looking as well, just looking at their standing posthumously, Hummus.
I can never say that.
I don't want Hummus.
Yeah.
But Actually, I'm looking at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So Tupac was the first solo rapper in 2017 to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Biggie was inducted in 2020. And when you look at the names of people who are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, for those two to be inducted into it, it does show the impact they had in such a short career span.
Yeah.
On music.
Yeah. So, well, Biggie released one album while he was alive.
Mm.
And then he had an album in, that was ready.
Yeah.
But he died and they brought it out after he died. Obviously, people like Eminem have produced albums called Resurrection, which was based on the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Afeni Shakur gave him the okay on that. Mm. And I know that Mrs. Wallace, not Biggie's mother, I can't think of her first name. No, she was a teacher.
Okay.
And very, like you, we were talking off air, but very protective of Biggie and always trying to keep him on the straight and narrow. Biggie was actually a good guy, they've said. You know, he wasn't into the... To you know, even though the stuff he rapped about might have come across, but he wasn't actually into the shooting and the guns and the gang culture. Tupac was actually living gang culture. And that was the influence of Suge Knight. When you watch this documentary, they go back to Death Row Records. Now, we will do one in the future on like Jimmy Iovine. I've talked about the Defiant ones with Dr. Dre. They obviously created beats together. But Jimmy Iovine at that time saw the rise of rap. So Death Row Records was a subsidiary of Interscope Records.
Okay.
Subsequently, Aftermath Records came off that, which is Dr. Dre, Eminem, and all of that. Now, some of the stories they say about Death Row, and they've got pictures, right? They just have women come in and they're naked. There's just sex happening in groups. They used to get women to fight each other as well, like fight each other. And there's one woman there who worked, I think, as a secretary or some, or a photographer or something like that. And Suge Knight, she said Suge Knight set it up that she came in one day and they got this girl to basically beat her up. And she shows photos of her face being smashed in. And she ran across the corridor to Interscope, right? Because they were the other side, which is I can always picture Interscope being like all prim and proper.
Yeah.
Death Row down the road, like music blasting, smoking weed, drinking, you know, and all the other stuff that comes with that. But interestingly, a couple of people made the point on the documentary about how Jimmy Iovine and a couple of the others at Interscope, they could have been the ones who got Tupac before Suge.
Yeah.
And got him out, took him under his wing, and understood he's probably a bit fragile.
Yeah.
We need you to stay on the straight and narrow. Because ultimately, let's be honest, a lot of music executives, the middle-aged white men, or younger, whatever you want to call it, they would just see Tupac as an asset.
Yeah.
How much units is he going to shift over a year? But so in order to do that, they need to protect their asset. But they let Suge Knight go and get him.
Go and get him, yeah.
And from that point, you can see some of the conversation Suge had with Tupac, like in his ear, almost like they're on camera and he's pushing him. And he's like, you know, write a song about Biggie. And there's that one, remember you wanted to touch on that, the whole thing about Tupac sleeping with Faith Evans, Biggie's wife.
Yeah.
You found that crazy. You text me, didn't you? And I was like, because I was so excited you were learning about all this.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just crazy, wasn't it? Yeah. And that added fuel to the fire, so... You know, I think he wrote a song. It starts off with him saying, "I effed your bitch, you fat mother."
Yeah.
And then he goes into it.
Yeah.
You know.
Because that was where Biggie's married to Faith Evans at that point.
Right.
Yeah. And then there was something about money, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then, he insinuated that it was more of a sexual act instead of payment. Stuff like that. So, yeah.
And that's obviously where the breakdown of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Biggie responded then, though, which obviously with "Who Shot You?"
Yeah.
So even though he'd obviously stood that I didn't get Tupac shot, or actually you wrote a song about sleeping with my wife, so now I did set up the shooting.
Yeah.
Which I don't think Biggie did, but I think they were just trying to hurt each other.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we probably sit back at stuff when we hear music, like beef music. I always sit back and go, it's just like playground antics. It is playground antics, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was like the West Coast, East Coast thing was interesting because that was born out of the award ceremony that was held in New York. And at the time, Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre were riding high. Mm. And Suge Knight went up on stage in a red T-shirt and basically took the mick out of Puff Daddy. Because he just said, Puff Daddy's in the audience, by the way. They're in New York. And he's going, if you want to work with a producer who's not all up in the videos, dancing all over, because Puff Daddy would be in the videos, that was his thing.
Yeah.
He goes, come and join Death Row. And then Snoop Dogg goes up to pick up an award later and people are booing him.
Mm.
And he really gets angry. He's like, you've got no love for Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre? There's a scene out there. East Coast, West Coast starts.
Mm.
And obviously Tupac, they're releasing songs about each other in the aftermath of that. So, but do you see a link to children there? Playground antics as well? I do.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the big bully inside him with a bully, but then the victim decides to become a bully, and then it is when you have two bullies meet each other and they kind of neutralize each other.
Yeah, they do
in some way.
Yeah,
it's like, well, we're gonna have to fight. Now you just want to fight. but you know, I'd rather pick on someone who doesn't want to fight me. But now they're battling, you know, it's like, well, oh, we're gonna have to fight now, aren't we?
Yeah.
And how can we get additional protection? Which is where the police probably came in.
Yeah, just you needed inside people to backup. Yeah. I think look, we've come to a close now. I think I hope people enjoy, and please send in, you know, your own perceptions, facts about it. I read a great one about Tupac the other day, where a fan had written him a letter saying she had no one to go to the prom with. And she really wanted him to go. Just, you know, one of those letters fans send on the off chance. And there's a picture of Tupac with this. He basically sent money for her to go and get a prom dress. Then he basically showed up at her doors first and said, I accept you know, your invitation. Sent money, give her money to go and get a dress. And then later on, collected her in a limousine and took her to, and people like at this this place going, oh my God, it's Tupac. Yeah. You know, this was probably one of the biggest, probably well-known faces in America at the time. So obviously he did have that tender side, which was, I suppose, a little bit broken down by his time in prison and being shot at. But I would urge people, as probably a start point, to go to the LA 92 documentary, just to understand black people's relationship or lack of relationship with the LAPD. And they've definitely got full-on justifiable reasons why. Then you can move on to the original Nick Broomfield documentary, Biggie and Tupac. And then there's a follow-up one on iPlayer at the moment. The follow-up one is interesting because Suge Knight's in prison and all of a sudden people start talking.
Yeah.
Which I think he had a bigger part to play in it than a lot of people understand. There's one point where he goes, I know who shot both of them, but I'm not a snitch. Going back to your previous point, Suge Knight says that. So there's a big thing in gang culture, isn't it, about if you're a snitch, you're going to die. But at the same time, it's almost like if you say that you cared about Tupac to the degree you cared about him, you'd want to do anything to see justice put against him. But we haven't lived that gang life, mate. Anyway, any pausing thoughts? Any final thoughts on it all?
I mean, for me, you know, and I know there's some people who listen to this who probably have never listened to Biggie and Tupac.
Yep.
For me, I just recommend just go and take some time and actually listen to it. You know, and listen to, as I always bang on, listen to the lyrics, have a look at what they're saying, you know, Google the lyrics, you know, really see the messages they're trying to get across. Because a lot of people always think the rap is just all about fighting negativity and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, some people, but actually when you read it, it's actually quite personal what they share. And like you said, it's a form of poetry. So.
And also, and yeah, and I want to add one last bit on that. You've just jogged my memory. It's funny how rap was perceived like that. I can put up multiple examples. I'm going to give you two quick ones though. Johnny Cash in the 60s, Cocaine Blues, took a shot of cocaine, shot my woman down. Folsom Prison, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. That wasn't scorned upon, right? That's insinuating violence.
Yeah. Okay?
Beatles, Run For Your Life, Little Girl. If I catch you with another man, that's the end, little girl. That's off like Norwegian Wood, 65.
Yeah. Queen, Mama Just Killed a Man.
But again, I mean, against his head. I used to have a Johnny Cash CD, and on the inside, there were people who loved him.
Yeah.
And one of the people who put a thing on there was Snoop Dogg going, this man was an early rap star.
Yeah.
Because of the lyric context. As it is. So there you go. I hope people enjoyed.
Hopefully this works.
We've moved to the seaside.
We have. We've gone. Ooh, some proper seagulls.
Maybe put it down, just in case it dominates the
microphone. I'll move it down.
Hopefully just people can hear it in the background.
Yeah. Some nice...
Bryn just jumped in the sea.
He jumped in the sea. I walked the plank. So, yeah, seagull corner. So what we've got is, basically, we had challenges, questions about best seagull jokes, best jokes about corners. So we've got five of each.
Cool.
So I'll do a seagull joke, you do a corner joke.
Sweet.
You can just go like
vice
that.
Vice versa.
So,
ready? No, you go first.
I'll go first. Why can nobody see the seagull?
I don't know, Bryn. Why can nobody see the seagull?
Because it was in disguise.
In disguise. Okay, I've got a corner joke.
Okay.
I spotted a group of people standing on the corner of the street drinking Earl Grey. Turns out it was a T-junction. Back to you.
What do you call a seagull during the winter?
I don't know.
A bird.
We've had this one before, I think.
Okay.
Stamps. They sit in the corner and do nothing all day and somehow still travel all over the world.
What do you call a small Scottish seagull?
I don't know.
A Weagle. Oh, you like that one, do you?
I was working as a delivery driver. I asked the recipient where he wanted his giant roll of bubble wrap. He said, pop it in the corner. Took me 3.5 hours.
Oh, I'd love to do that, though. Just I know. What do you call a seagull on the moon?
I don't know.
Lost.
Oh, God, simple.
Yeah.
Found that the best way to use scissors to make a perfect paper circle is not to cut any corners.
Why did the pirate buy a seagull instead of a parrot?
Don't know.
It was on sale.
Oh, God.
Last one.
Bought a reflective jacket. It just sits in the corner all day and reads Descartes. And that concludes Seagull Corner. Yeah, which we don't know which child
we
again.
Don't know which one it is.
They but we've got up. Max now.
We have got Max now. So we've got Max, we've got Gwen, Liam, we've got Bramwyn and Nora.
We do need more.
Need more.
I'm going to ask Grant to do more. Get one from Amelia.
What's doing himself for?
Well, he sounds like a child. Looks like a child.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are taller than him. So anyway, so challenges. Obviously, other people can do these. Mm. You know, we try and do it as inclusive as possible. So for you, you mentioned you want to get back in the gym.
Yep.
So all I want you to do, because we mentioned about listening to different stuff in the gym,
yeah,
I want you to try out a few different genres when you're on the bike,
okay,
and just feedback. So have a laugh, listen to country music for one,
cool,
listen to R&B for another, listen to metal for another, and just each time you go, listen to a different
something
genre.
Something different. Okay, yeah. That'll give me a focus to go.
Yeah.
I am away a bit with work, so if it's not gym, I'll run.
Yeah,
I'll take my running shoes and I'll run.
Even if you do a power walk, you know, just have a different genre and just see how it affects your mood.
Definitely.
Well. Yeah.
Okay, I know you've been on a health kick again.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've been struggling with not working out, walking, running, all that stuff. I just want you to reflect this week on why working out is important to you.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I want you to try and go for a walk. Nothing mm-hmm. strenuous, because I know you're on a bit of a plan at the moment, so
yeah,
you have to kind of trust the process. But try and get some time to go for a walk, there's a break in work or mm-hmm. something like that, and really reflect and capture some areas. Because I know working out for you is a big part of your life,
yeah,
all right? And when you're not able to do it, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
But also thinking forward as well, your body, you know, you got to look after it.
Yeah.
And you do get told off quite often, don't you, for playing rugby.
By many people.
Yeah, when you think. So just reflect why it's important, the importance of your body,
mm-hmm.
and really what measures can you take to make sure it goes for as long as it can.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So is that fair?
Yep, that's fair.
Cool.
Let's go.
Okay, so outro time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope people enjoyed that. Pushed your comfort zone a bit, didn't it? Which,
definitely.
I'm glad. And
looking
you
forward to you doing
challenge.
Barbie Girl for the next one.
Well, you embraced the challenge because you put it forward, and I'm proud of that.
Please let us know. You know, get in touch if you have any ideas and things like that, and you know, different ones to go with.
I know. Sorry, as well. Bob Marley's on the list.
Bob Marley is on the list. Yeah.
Guy, I've done one few Biggie Tupac. It's on the list.
It is on the list. But one way to get in touch is email captainandcookpod@gmail.com, and we've had it's not Kiwi. But it's his mum. So initially I was
Mama
a bit
Kiwi.
Worried. I was like, oh, what have we done wrong? But she just wants to say hi, Bryn and Aaron. So she still dips in out of the podcast, listened to the Bristol one that she found entertaining. And she had a chuckle when we said that Tez was Kiwi standing. Informative bits and bobs that never end to enlighten her. And she wants to say, well done for carrying on as you do. It's always great to hear friends having good old discussions and a laugh together too.
That's touching.
Yeah.
That's really touching.
Nice. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Sue, for that. Kiwi, you need to up your game. Your mum's doing more than you.
Your mum's taking over.
Yeah.
She's our favourite fan now.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get some backlash for saying that from a few people. And actually, on him, he's dominating the outro. It was his birthday this week, so just
happy
a quick
birthday.
Happy birthday to you, Q.
We've got Arctic Monkeys soon.
We've got Arctic Monkeys to celebrate with him. And the last one, sombre celebration note. So we're recording on the 24th. The 25th is a year since Taylor Hawkins passed.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, if you're listening to this, as soon as you finish this, just chuck some on.
And
you know,
funny enough,
one of two songs. Yeah.
There's a few things that's mad at you.
Mm.
Didn't even realise.
Yeah.
And go back to Taylor Hawkins' episode as well. You find it literally is just titled Taylor Hawkins.
Yeah.
Also, I can't remember if I sent you the clip the other day, but David Byrne's redoing.
You did. Stop you Talking Sense. Yes. Yeah.
They're remastering it, aren't they? And he's done like a new intro video for it. So yeah, and I've started reading Jason Williamson's short stories you got me for Christmas.
Oh, lovely.
I'm loving life.
Awesome.
As you can imagine.
As we do.
Until next time, try from me.
Try from him.